Welcome to the Work Seminar, the podcast for people with liberal arts advanced degrees considering work outside their fields of study. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me for another episode. I'm your host, Jesse Butts. Today, I'm talking with Jillian Rushuval, who's an MA in writing and publishing turned content strategist. Jillian and I met in grad school at DePaul. Jillian's now a senior content strategist for a large tech company. Jillian, welcome. Delighted to have you.
Thank you for having me. I am very excited about this conversation.
Me too. So, you know, during this show, we talk a lot about, you know, what you did in grad school, what you did after, and what you think about work in terms of what is a good fit, do you need to love it, what you recommend for others. But before we dive into that, I do want to take a bit to talk about what you're doing now. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about what you do? What exactly is a content strategist?
So a content strategist is someone, I like to say, who is always asking the question, why? And the reason I say that is because in the world of experience design, so designing mostly digital experiences, a lot of times, you know, there's not a lot of thinking about the role that content plays in those experiences. And the job of the content strategist is really to be the voice for that, to say, you know, in this experience, if it is a, you know, appointment scheduling application, or if it's an e-commerce website, the job of the content strategist is to say, so how are we using content to aid, you know, the end user in accomplishing whatever goal they want to accomplish? And I found throughout my work in content strategy that content is often something you think about after you've done the design of the product. And what really should be the case is content should be considered an integral part of a digital product. So not something, it's not just words that you kind of add later. It's really doing that thinking about what kind of voice and tone are we going to have for this experience? Is it going to be formal? Is it going to be a bit more friendly, a bit more irreverent? You know, just doing all of that thinking as you do product design. And that's really the role that content strategist plays. So in my work, I'm always partnering with user experience designers and business analysts and marketing folks, web development folks, because my work kind of touches all of those areas. So I would say, yeah, content strategist is somebody who does the thinking about content in an experience.
Okay. And some of those terms that you were using, like a digital experience, for example, that would mean whether I'm on an app or a website or a piece of software, something of that manner. Is that fairly accurate?
Correct. Someone has to do the thinking about like how content informs those experiences and how content helps people use those experiences. So that's what a content strategist does.
All right. I mean, that sounds like a really fascinating field, and I really want to hear how you got there. So let's start with grad school. I mean, obviously, or maybe I shouldn't say obviously, but I mean, you didn't study a degree in content strategy, conversational design, things like that. I know we were both in a program that, you know, it had a professional writing emphasis. It had a creative writing emphasis. You could kind of forge your own path. And I do remember you in I think we had at least a couple classes that were more focused on creative nonfiction and maybe even fiction. So I'm curious, what prompted you to enroll in grad school? Why did you decide to go beyond undergrad?
So I've got about 10 years separating undergrad and grad school. And I would say the main reason at the time was just restlessness. Okay. I was living in New York City at the time. I was really tired of living in New York. I'd been there 7 years. And I was looking for something, some reason to basically leave. It was, you know, I had a couple considerations. All my family's based in New Jersey. So wherever I moved, I knew I wanted to be in a different part of the country. And I knew that I was going to be far away from them. I remember looking at a bunch of schools. I looked at schools in San Francisco. I looked at schools in Portland, and ended up choosing DePaul because I had one person in Chicago that I knew. I had met someone in an online community. And I was like, well, if I go to Chicago, at least I know one person there. Like, so instead of going to a new city and just starting from scratch to meet people. And I liked the program that DePaul had. I really liked that there were kind of different paths you could take. You could go the creative writing path. You could go the professional writing path, or you could, you know, choose one and dabble in the other if you wanted to. I used that as my time to kind of explore my writing a little bit more and see, you know, what I was into. As an undergraduate, I studied journalism, and I never, you know, getting into journalism is kind of difficult. So I never really got into journalism, but I did do, you know, technical writing, technical publishing, corporate communications, and, you know, that stuff started to feel unfulfilling after a while. So grad school was an opportunity for me to kind of get back to my roots a little bit of focusing on writing, but also be in a new city, meet new people, and kind of carve out more of an identity, a separate identity for myself.
So when you mentioned restlessness, I relate to that. I remember feeling like work wasn't fulfilling me and I really wanted something else. Attending grad school, was that more for personal reasons? Was it for career reasons? Did you kind of consider it a hybrid of this is something I need to do for me and doesn't hurt to have a master's in writing once I'm finished? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, although I probably couldn't articulate this at the time, it was definitely something I wanted to do for myself. You know, I had never, because I went to school in the same state where I grew up, and then I moved to New York, which, you know, again, I was kind of in the same area that I grew up, and I had never really gone to another city and carved out a life for myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I want to at least have the experience of doing that. But also I wanted to pursue my passion, I guess. And writing has always been my passion since I was a kid. And I wanted to do it in a way that allowed me to tap more into my creativity. Writing corporate communications is not the most scintillating stuff in the world. And I wanted I wanted to give myself some space to explore writing that I was actually interested in doing. So I think it was a little bit of both.
So when you were in grad school, were you working as well? Did you keep employment or were you a full-time grad student?
So I was working, but I was working in a way that like I had a very flexible schedule that allowed me to focus on my studies, you know, while also earning money to support myself.
Got it. And at the end of grad school, had you, like you mentioned earlier, kind of struck a balance between more professional oriented and more creative oriented courses? How did it end up skewing for you in terms of what you studied?
I think it ended up skewing a bit more creative for me. Because that was the stuff that, you know, I found stimulating, especially creative nonfiction. That was, at the time, an emerging kind of genre, I guess. So I really wanted to pursue that and essay writing. And, you know, essay writing is a means of thinking things through or breaking down, you know, a problem or an issue. And at the end of grad school, I can honestly say I didn't know what I wanted to do with that degree. I was like, well, now I have this master's degree and, you know, I have this experience and I don't know kind of where I want to take it. And one of the things I did immediately after was one of our classmates in the program, whose name escapes me right now, he was beginning a music website. He was launching a music website with some friends of his and he needed writers. So I wrote for like 9 months, I wrote like music reviews.
Oh, cool.
Concert reviews. I often forget that I even did that. But it was a way for me to continue focusing on my writing, doing something creative, doing something with pop culture, which I hadn't done before. And that was a fun thing to do. But I still, I think at the end of grad school was like, what do I do now? I kind of don't know where I want to take these new skills and this new experience that I've acquired. So it definitely took some time for me to find that.
So what did you start doing after grad school and after writing for that music publication?
So after grad school, I ended up working in a couple of different agencies.
Ad agencies?
Ad agency, marketing agency.
Got it.
I worked for a marketing agency for about a year and a half, whose main client was Sears.
Okay. Rest in peace, Sears.
Exactly.
It's always sad to see a Chicago company go to the wayside, but yeah.
Exactly. So I worked there for about a year and a half, and it was a lot of like copy editing and, you know, doing that kind of thing. And yeah, I took many winding roads. For a while, I kind of got back into corporate communication at the community college system in Chicago, City Colleges. And I was on their marketing team as a corporate communications specialist for about a year. That job kind of led me to stumbling into content strategy.
Okay.
Because that was not a fun job. And I was looking for something new, something different. And I found a contract role at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And they had just started building a content strategy team. So I think a lot of businesses at the time were like, content strategy, what's that? I think we need it. And started either hiring people to do content strategy or building teams from within to, you know, serve as content strategy experts. And I got hired onto this team as a copywriter. So I was doing marketing brochures, customer emails, but I was sitting in a content strategy team. The content strategist on the team at the time, she left after about 8 months, and I had worked really closely with her. So after she left, I said to the manager, you know, what do you think about me? And I don't know if this was because I was a contractor or if it was because I was on a new team, but she was like, sure. So that's how I became a content strategist. Very accidental.
But advocating for yourself as well.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because I actually did think about it a lot before I asked her that. Yeah. So I always like to say, like, I'm self-taught in many ways, because I remember, like, I just took one Saturday and I read that Christina Halverson book, Content Strategy for the Web.
Yeah. I have my copy in the bookshelf.
Yeah. And I just read it in a day.
Obviously, you know, we talked about you advocated for yourself. You thought a lot about it. It sounds like there was maybe a little bit of a skill gap, and you took that upon yourself to cover that. The employer didn't say, hey, take a week or two and learn these things. That was presumably your nights and weekends for a good chunk of that learning.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I definitely didn't receive any support. I went to a bunch of content strategy meetups just to kind of learn what kinds of things do content strategists talk about, you know, what kind of challenges do they face? That was about like a good 2-3 years of doing like education.
That's a considerable amount of time invested. I mean, I have to assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that doing that, it sounds like you really found a niche you wanted to sink your teeth into. Like you probably could have, you know, spent a couple months on and off and been competent, but it sounds, I mean, and if I'm inferring something that's not there, I apologize, but it sounds like it was excellence that would really drive someone to do that for 2 to 3 years and really wanting to make their mark. Is that pretty fair? Or?
So I wanted to get myself to the point where I understood the lingo and I could converse in a competent way about content strategy and have my own questions and develop my own ideas. Because one of the things I really like about content strategy as a discipline is that it's always evolving. You know, from when I first started doing it 9 years ago to now, it's just changed so much and evolved and grown and kind of taken in input from other disciplines like user experience. And that's one of the things that really drew me to it, was that it was something that everyone who's a practitioner was kind of collaborating to create and evolve. So I found that really exciting. And I also think I found exciting that a lot of content strategy involves problem solving. And, you know, that's work that I find compelling, no matter what situation you're in. You know, just kind of sitting down with a group and kind of puzzling out, okay, how do we address this problem? You know, how do we break it down? How do we shape a solution to it? And I would say those are some of the things that drew me to it. And as I got more into it, I started to feel more passionate about content strategy and the ways that it could help, you know, build really meaningful and inclusive experiences for people.
When you talk about that, those meaningful, inclusive experiences, can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the ways that I've seen content strategy evolve, because I think before it was about, or largely about, creating experiences that help people complete their tasks efficiently. And now it's widened to include things like accessibility. And one particular project I'm working on right now is determining the best way to collect data about sexual orientation and gender identity. You know, how can we do that in a way that's sensitive? How do we determine when we really need to ask for that data? And, you know, it's still something that a lot of companies are puzzling through, because, you know, I think about myself when I'm filling out a form, you know, in a healthcare setting, for instance. And, you know, typically you see on a form if they're requiring or requesting information about gender, it'll be some variation of male, female, other, or male, female, choose not to disclose. And one of the things that a content strategist can do is say, you know, who's being left out of that other? Well, who are all the people in, you know, kind of encompassed in that word that is othering and kind of dismissive? And how can we make the experience of filling out this form more inclusive for them and make them feel seen? And it's hard work doing that thinking, but that's the kind of stuff that I think content strategists can do really well, is, you know, leading those conversations in settings where might not have been considered. You know, just kind of takes for granted that everyone falls into these categories and some people don't. And, but you want everyone to fill out your form, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how, you know, in the corporate world, we call it making the business case. And like, you want, you know, compliance with XYZ part of your digital experience, then you need to make it inclusive. So that's the kind of thinking that's really interesting. And that's the kind of problem solving that I just find really compelling.
So many times after grad school, we find ourselves looking at careers. We might think like, am I really making big change? Am I really doing something that I find meaningful? And quite clearly, you know, you've found a part of content strategy that really does give you that feeling that you're helping with something bigger.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just always, you know, fascinated and surprised by the paths that content strategy takes me down. You know, accessibility was, again, something that I didn't really think about until I had to think about it in terms of building an experience, building a digital experience. And then it opened this whole world for me of, you know, what else are we taking for granted when we create experiences? So that's an area that allows me to do what I call like work that lifts people up. And I do feel like content strategy is one of those disciplines where you can do that. And that's, you know, that's something that I think is something I've always been pursuing, you know, maybe without knowing it, is doing work that creates a more just world, even if it's just a little bit, right? If it gives someone access that they didn't previously have, I think that's really important to be able to, you know, say that I helped to do that.
Absolutely. Would you mind talking about, you know, did you have any reluctance initially to take a contract job? Were you open to them? I feel like a lot of listeners, you know, may not really know what that's like. And is that the best way to find something good? Or do I only look for full-time jobs? What was your experience with things like that?
So at the time that I was in Chicago, the job market was kind of tough. It was post-2008. You know, I graduated in 2009, so just kind of a year out from the financial crisis. So the job market was really tough. And I found that contract work paid a little better. So in terms of just kind of needing to pay the bills, you know, I in some ways felt like that was the best avenue to go. You get paid better, but you don't really have access to all the benefits that a full-time employee would. So I think for every person, you have to figure out how to navigate that. A couple years after I moved back to the East Coast, I was in a contract role, but by that time, you know, ACA was fully enforced. I was able to, you know, get on one of the plans, you know, I think like a bronze plan here in New Jersey. So I had some coverage. Back in 2009, I don't think that was the case. So I would just kind of go without health insurance, which not advisable. Some of the employment agencies will provide benefits. I did work with one in Chicago that did provide benefits. So that was good. But I think it's kind of standard now for employment agencies to provide benefits. But again, in some ways, 2008, 2009 was kind of this like free for all where it was like, you know, a lot of those things that are standard now weren't yet in place. I will say that in terms of contract versus full time, I found that contract work is where I've been able to learn the most. Because a lot of times, like contractors are brought in to fill some sort of gap, whether it's somebody going on leave or, you know, someone leaving suddenly and they need someone to pick up work very quickly. I found that coming into those kind of circumstances as a contractor gives you a certain degree of freedom because it's all about kind of getting the work done. And so you're a bit less restricted in terms of like, you know, your employer thinking, okay, these are the, you know, these are the tasks that are ascribed to your job description. When you're a contractor, I feel like, you know, employers just kind of want to get the most out of you, you know, whether it's in your job description or not. And that, you know, a lot of times you have to get up to speed very quickly, whether it's on a specific project or about an industry that you don't know anything about. When I started working at Chicago Mercantile Exchange, I didn't know anything about working on a financial exchange, you know, trading. I had no clue. But in those situations, you just have to learn very quickly by necessity. And I found that having to do that really fast learning is what helps me grow the most. Not that you can't do that in a full-time permanent position, but in a full-time permanent position, you've just got a lot more runway when you start. You know, you're going through onboarding for a couple of weeks, and then you may or may not get assigned a project right away. So you've got a little more time. Whereas in a contract role, you just have to learn fast. You have to learn the job fast. You have to learn the norms of the company very quickly. And you have to, if you're working with external clients, you have to learn about clients and their industries very quickly. I would say like the necessity of that is a real big motivator and has helped me learn and grow and acquire experience that I can take into other roles.
Since you've had, you know, several contract experiences, are you full-time with a company now, or do you prefer working on a contract basis now?
So I'm full-time in my current role.
Okay.
I have been contract on and off, I would say, for like the last 10 years. And, you know, in my current role, it's, you know, I'm working for a tech company. They do a lot of software implementations. And there's enough diversity of projects and clients that, you know, I feel like I've learned a lot, and I've only been there like 10 months at this point.
Oh, wow.
So right now I'm working with a healthcare client, and I'm learning a lot about that industry that I didn't know before. You know, in previous roles, I worked with pharma clients, learned all about, you know, clinical trials and how drugs get brought to market. Again, information that I didn't know before, and now I could take into future roles. Like I said, I think you can get experience, you know, in both contract and full-time. I just think like the nature of that learning will be different. And I don't have a preference between full-time or contract at this point. 5 years ago, I probably would have said I preferred contract because it pays better and you just get to learn a lot more quickly. But there's advantages, you know, there's pros and cons to both.
Yeah, and something listeners should be aware of too. Part of the reason contract work pays better is that the employer isn't having to, there's obviously the benefits we think of like health insurance, dental, that type of thing, but also employers have to match what you pay into Social Security and Medicare taxes. Mm-hmm. And when you're a contractor, actually neither of you are paying that. Like right. If you're a contractor, you will figure that out in your taxes at the end of the year. So, you know, do a little math to figure out what exactly that might be living wise, you know, as far as what you'll have to set aside for some of those things.
Yeah, that's a really good point. In recent years, I've seen employment agencies more and more take on the payroll tax. Mm-hmm. I remember like maybe 6-7 years ago, you would see offers for like, you know, contract role, 6 months, 1099, which means they're not taking out the taxes. I see that less and less because I guess I'm on so many, you know, job boards or whatever still that I still get random recruiting emails from time to time. But I never unsubscribe from those lists because I always want to understand like what the labor market is like. A lot of content strategists I've worked with in the past are just freelance, self-employed. So they're not going through an agency necessarily. They're just freelance and they've got to do all of that work and all of that consideration of how much do I set aside for taxes, you know, from each paycheck or what have you. So yeah, that's really important to be aware of as you're thinking or if you're thinking about taking on a contract opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you mentioned 1099, instead of sending you a W-2, which a lot of listeners might have received, you know, that lists out how much you earned, people who are self-employed or contracting, not through an agency who does payroll, but with that company, they receive a different form called a 1099.
Yeah.
So it's just a little year-end tax thing. One thing, going back a little bit earlier, you mentioned a lot of experience in corporate communications and then shifting to content strategy where, you know, obviously you found something you're really passionate about. Can you explain a little bit about what that corporate communications work entailed and why you personally prefer content strategy over pursuing a career in corporate communications?
Cool. Yeah, I can do that. So before grad school, I worked in corporate communications when I was living in New York City. I worked for two different insurance companies on their corporate communications teams, specifically doing internal communications. So communications and marketing to employees. So it's very niche. You know, it's things like working on the content for the company intranet, or you know, sending out those lovely employee emails that everyone loves to get.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love them.
Yep. That was me. And so I always say that I have sympathy for people who do that work, because it's really thankless. And it's a lot of work. I did a lot of writing in those roles, and I got to do some strategy, but you know, my role was always kind of like the tactical role, where, you know, the strategy's already been determined, and now, you know, I have to execute it. So I didn't really like that. I wanted to be in the role where, you know, we were doing the thinking about how to communicate. And, you know, if we were going to communicate about a specific initiative or something like benefits, if we're going to communicate about open enrollment, how would we do that? How would we go about it? What kind of schedule would we be on? How would we distribute communications via email, via the intranet? And there was some event planning too, because, you know, representatives from the health insurance company would come in and give their talk about what's available. So I wanted to be doing more of that. And one of the reasons I left New York was I didn't find that work fulfilling. And I wanted to see, you know, what other types of work out there could I pursue, you know, with having a writing background, but that was more at the strategic level. So post-grad school, I did a bit of corporate communications work, primarily at City Colleges of Chicago, which was a unique environment because students were classified as both an internal and an external audience. So I worked frequently with the PR people, you know, who were doing communication more to prospective students. And I was doing communication to, you know, current students. But I still was like not super satisfied with that work. And also City Colleges of Chicago at the time was a very challenging environment to work in. But when I got to Chicago Mercantile Exchange, I finally saw like the opportunity to be in a more strategic role, to take the time to do the thinking about messaging. You know, how do we message something? Like, we have the substance of the message, but how do we frame it for people? You know, how do we communicate in a way that gets them to take action? Because obviously that's a big part of content strategy. And I in that role as a content writer, which is how I started out there, I saw the opportunity to take kind of the tactical experience I had creating communications and combine that with more strategic work, doing more of the conception of messaging. And that, I think that's how that transition happened. As I mentioned, I somewhat stumbled into that content strategy role, but I think it was serendipitous because it was at a time when I was coming out of doing corporate communication. So I still had, you know, some of that experience around execution that I could transition into strategic thinking about content.
This is a really nice segue into to what I was going to ask a bit about, you know, the self-discovery of what did you have to learn about yourself? And it sounds like part of that for you was that strategic work and not just doing the tactical writing, but thinking about it. Was that something you had known for a while was important? Like, was that something that now that you look back was clear? Can you explain a little bit about how to think about what will really matter to you as you start looking for work outside of what you've been doing or what you've been studying?
That's a good question. And thinking back, it was the frustration that I felt when as a communication specialist, you know, a project would be brought to me. You know, we need to communicate XYZ. But there'd be a lot of unanswered questions. Who's the audience? What do we want them to do? Or, you know, are we just communicating this for the sake of communicating it? Or is there something that the end user needs to do? And so I think for me, I wanted those questions answered before they came to me. And that was the part that I think led to me wanting to do more of the strategic work, because so much of the work that I was doing, you know, the thinking hadn't been done. And so I, you know, it would slow down my work because I would have to spend time answering these questions, where I always thought that like the people bringing that work to me knew the answers to those questions, but they took for granted that I did as well. So that's what led me to wanting to be more involved in the strategy. Again, it's not something I think I could have articulated at the time, but ultimately, I would say, you know, if any listeners kind of find themselves in that situation of like, you know, this work is unsatisfying to me, why is it unsatisfying to me? You know, really probe and try to figure out, what is it you find unsatisfying about the work? What are your frustrations? And what's the source of your frustrations? I have a really good example. When I was working at City Colleges of Chicago, I was asked to write a promotional webpage for a curriculum program that was aimed at veterans. That's, again, that's work that I think would be fulfilling. But so many of the questions hadn't been answered. Like, what are we communicating? What is the curriculum? Why is it specific to veterans? How is it different from, you know, targeting any other prospective students? And so much of that thinking hadn't been done that I couldn't do my work. It's things like that where I found myself kind of thwarted in being able to execute the way I'm supposed to in a job that led me to wanting to have a seat at the table when those discussions were happening.
I'm curious if writing is important as a foundation. I mean, a lot of the things you describe as strategic thinking, they could be found in a lot of jobs that really have little or nothing to do mm-hmm. with content. I'm curious if you always wanted to stay with writing. How does that play a role into how you found work that you enjoy?
So when I started out in content strategy, I remember being really excited because I thought a lot of what I'm being asked to do in content strategy is what I was being asked to do, you know, during grad school when I would have to write a paper or a reaction. I had to think about my audience. You know, in your day-to-day work as a content strategist, you are formulating something of a thesis statement a lot of the time, right? So I just remember feeling like it was a good pairing, a good way for me to take the skills I had as a writer and use them, not necessarily to write, although I do a lot of writing in my job, but to do the thinking that comes with writing. I'm still excited by the fact that I get to take those kind of problem-solving skills that I developed as a writer and use them to develop content strategies, because I think there's a lot of overlap there. And writers that I've worked with in different jobs tend to ask the same questions about audience, about the rationale for communicating something, and then pulling out a bit more to where does this messaging fit in a grander scheme of things. So yeah, I found that my background as a writer has really helped in the way I've approached content strategy.
I have a pet theory that those workshops in grad school were so helpful. Presenting your work to 20 smart people who are asking good questions and pointing out things that maybe you don't agree with all of them, but you have to sit there and absorb it. I think that's such a valuable skill. And obviously, you know, these are a method taught in undergrad as well, but I'm curious if you've you know, looking back at those workshops, if you found something similar to be true for how you think about writing and doing that type of work now.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think that's a great point. It has helped me be a lot more accepting of valid criticism and not thinking like I'm in my work totally fine with abandoning an idea if I feel like it's not working. If I feel like, you know, approaching something in a certain way is not, you know, serving the needs of the client, the needs of the project, what have you. Because, you know, I think like there's times when I come up with like this great framework idea, like we're going to approach this thing in this way. And as you go through it, you realize, doesn't really work, you know? So, and those are the ideas that I say, okay, you know, I save that. Maybe it will work eventually for a different project, but right now it's not working. So let's abandon it. And I'm totally fine with that because I really just want to find a method of problem solving that works. And I, you know, I think that's one of the big takeaways for me from workshopping. And I have to say, I was really lucky at DePaul. Like we had really good workshops in class. And, you know, they're, like you said, we were surrounded by a lot of smart people and it was great to get feedback from them. I feel like that's one way you learn about yourself as a writer, you know, things you don't realize about yourself as a writer. In workshops, you get an insight into yourself that I think is really helpful.
For people who didn't study writing, I mean, I think there's a really common thread with, you know, in the liberal arts fields, whether you're in, you know, drama or dance or, you know, studying history or what have you, just this idea of you've received a lot of criticism. That's something very valuable to an employer, not because they can berate you and get away with it, but I mean that you're going to be learning new skills, you're going to be in a new environment, and hearing their different arguments and their different perspectives that you might not have had a lot of exposure to up to this point, being able to take that and improve your work can really set you apart. I think that's something so important that people with the liberal arts background can bring to employers that we don't talk about or we don't emphasize enough. As we've been talking about this, I mean, it sounds like you very clearly, and you've mentioned the word passion too. I'm curious for you, how important was it or is it to love a job? Do you need to love a job? Is it something that you just like and you like to have free time outside of it? What type of role does work play in general for you and the importance of work in your life?
So I don't think you have to love a job. The most important thing for me in a job is always the people. Do I have support? You know, is everyone easy to get along with? Do we collaborate well? People always make the job for me. And I have been in some jobs where I've gotten really close with people because, you know, we're very supportive of each other, you know, when there's like challenges. And I don't think you have to love a job. I know that that's not possible for everybody. I do think it's important to have a job where you feel supported and where you feel like you can contribute. In jobs where I feel like I haven't been able to contribute properly, those I don't find really fulfilling. You can be passionate about your job, but I also think it's important to just have something that you're passionate about. And it doesn't have to be your work. I'm really passionate about teaching. And teaching something I've done on and off over the years. I love working with students. I love the sort of feeling of falling off a cliff that is teaching because I'm never going to throw myself off a cliff for real. So this is the closest I'm going to get to it. But I just love like working with students, watching them grow. I love curriculum development. So that's something that I have as a passion that I can pursue, that my current job lets me pursue. And if you have something in your life that you are, that excites you, I think your job can have its place in your life. And it can be, okay, the thing that you go to and it, you know, helps you pay the bills and whatever. but it doesn't have to be all consuming. It doesn't have to be your passion. You don't have to love your job. I think it's good if you at least like it or like the people, because nobody should be miserable every day.
Do you do any creative writing anymore?
I haven't done a ton of creative writing on and off. I've been doing freelance writing for some clients, more, you know, finance writing. Have not done creative writing, but it's something that I'm looking to get back to. I still journal, and that's probably the place where if I have any ideas for creative writing, that's where they'll go, so I don't lose them. But so far, not doing a ton of creative writing right now.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, the education, the teaching is something you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
So, you know, earlier you did provide some guidance for people about the questions they should ask if they're frustrated with jobs and how to get to the root of that. And so I think maybe a good note to end on would be, have you come across any resources, whether they're books, you know, TED Talks, video, like whatever, things that maybe people should check out if they are considering taking a leap, or specifically if they think how this content strategy stuff sounds interesting, where can I learn a bit more?
So in terms of where you can learn more about content strategy, and I'll take a look over at my bookshelf now. You know, I still love content strategy for the web. It's sort of the classic and a good kind of gateway into the world of content strategy. There's a ton of blogs and, you know, good folks to follow on Twitter. Carrie Hain is one of my favorites in the content strategy world. Content, in terms of content strategy, I love How to Make Sense of Any Mess by Abby Covert. That's more information architecture, but information architecture is something I dabble in a little bit. Primarily, you know, I sort of ask my UX colleagues about, you know, different aspects of information architecture. So I would start there. In terms of, I don't have any books for, you know, if people are considering taking some kind of career leap, but I would say, you know, the things to consider are, you know, what are you passionate about just in your life? Try to find work that lifts people up. Take time, make time to do some self-education, whether it's about a new career discipline that you want to pursue, or it's about, you know, some other aspect of life, make the time to do that. That's something that has really been helpful for me over the years, is just, you know, blocking out time to say, okay, this is my learning time. I may not be in a classroom anymore, but I still want to keep educating myself. So yeah, that's the advice I would give people.
I think that's a great note to end on. Thanks for joining us, Jillian. It was great.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Work Seminar. If you like what you've heard, please take a minute to rate the show on your favorite podcast app. Know someone who'd be a great Work Seminar guest? Or have a suggestion or two for the show? You can reach me at jesse@theworkseminar.com or at The Work Seminar on social. And special thanks, as always, to John Camp for the music and Isabel Patino for the cover art and design. Until next time, never cease from exploration.